Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as the JCPOA, was signed in July of 2015 by Iran, United States, and several other countries. As per the Iran nuclear deal, Tehran agreed to cut back on parts of its nuclear program, and the U.S. agreed to remove sanctions on Iran. However, in May of 2018, Donald Trump, during his first presidency term, announced the U.S.'s withdrawal from the JCPOA. Now, 7 years later, the same man who left the deal wants to talk to Iran again. Indirect talks between the two sides are scheduled to take place in Oman on Saturday. What can we expect?
Iran has reaffirmed its stance that negotiations with Washington will proceed only through indirect channels, ruling out any direct talks.
The negotiations will be held next Saturday in Oman. The talks will be indirect. We do not accept any way other than indirect talks.
Araghchi says the U.S. trying to impose its will through pressure and coercion is not cold negotiation, but rather an act of dictation. He emphasized that Tehran views indirect channels as a better means of ensuring effective and fruitful negotiations. The minister noted that if the other party demonstrates genuine will, an agreement will be in reach. The comments were made after Donald Trump claimed that Tehran and Washington would hold direct talks on Iran's nuclear program.
We're dealing with them directly. You know, a lot of people say, oh, maybe you're going through surrogates or you're not dealing directly, you're dealing through other countries. No, we're dealing with them directly.
Moscow has expressed support and emphasized that such discussions could help de-escalate tensions. The recent developments also earned a welcome from China that called on the U.S. to demonstrate political sincerity.
As the country that unilaterally withdrew from the comprehensive agreement on the Iran nuclear issue and caused the current situation, the U.S. should demonstrate political sincerity, uphold the spirit of mutual respect, participate in dialogue and consultation, and at the same time stop its wrong practice of threats of force and exerting maximum pressure.
As noted by China, U.S. actions, including Trump's withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal, have caused mistrust. Trump has threatened Iran with bombing its nuclear facilities, but many observers say the U.S. president does not want to accept the realities on the ground and achieve peace.
Trump has shown that, you know, he's unpredictable, he's not trustworthy, he's not diplomatic, and he is really have got no willingness to sort of look at the reality and move forward in a way that it will be interest of all parties.
Iran has been actively cooperating with the IAEA without leaving the negotiating table. Now the ball is in the U.S. court again. Before anything, Washington needs to build trust given its past performance.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Saad Shath, author and commentator out of Belfast. And Syed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. Well, thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start it off in Belfast. And Saad, what are your thoughts about these renewed talks on Iran's nuclear program with the U.S.?
It's obvious the deal, the one who collapsed it unilaterally was and withdrew the United States of America, was a Trump. With one tweet, he's disrespected the world powers who worked over 5 years, even more, to reach the JCPOA. After withdrawing, Trump reapplied the sanctions and what he said at the time, the maximum pressures. He said any agreement with Iran would have to limit its conventional weapons. He extended the demands, he want the Iranian arsenal to be open for American inspections, and all of that is. That's away from the nuclear program. Iran, even after all of that, committed
to the agreement for 1 year. It took Iran 1 year after the 1918 to start gradually suspending its commitment. But if we look what the Israeli and the Americans, because this is Netanyahu's ideas were behind Trump, they want a Libya model of negotiation. We know what happened in Libya. They even this cruise, they took them away with them when they dismantled Libya's nuclear program. Iran refused the demands Trump put in his letters. And as leaked, we know there is four demands under Mr. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Mr. Khamenei, rejected the idea of direct negotiation with the U.S. Second, he rejected the U.S. demand to dismantling Iranian nuclear facilities and stop all the uranium enrichment work above 3%. That's one of the demands. And to hand over, the Americans ask, 276 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium. Three, the cancellation and dismantling of the ballistic cruise and hypersonic missile system. And the last one, they demanded Iran to control the Houthi movement in Yemen, to allow the America not to, to stop their attacks in the American Navy, aircraft carriers in the Red Sea and the Arabian Sea, and to allow normal navigation in the of all ships, especially the military one, and specifically the Israeli ships. Mm-hmm. This is Trump then threatened to bomb Iran if they don't cut a deal with him.
Okay. All right. Said Mohsen, your thoughts. I mean, what would you say is the ultimate goal of Washington for wanting these talks with Iran at this time?
Well, it's their desire that Iran voluntarily capitulates. Basically, what they're asking for with these four demands with which Brother Saad has outlined, it's quite clear it's not a negotiation. This is not a negotiation that America wants. They want a surrender. They want the Iranians to essentially open up their entire military arsenal to the Americans' kind of access. They want to essentially make Iran renege on its sovereignty. The Iranians might as well say that we're going to go back on the Islamic Revolution altogether. They might as well hand over Tehran and the governance of Tehran to the U.S. or even Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, it would be a major act of folly and foolishness for any nation to literally say we are handing over our defense and our entire security to the very nation which has bases dotted around all around the Islamic Republic of Iran with weapons, could even be nuclear weapons, ballistic weapons for sure, which are all pointed at Iran. That's whether you look at Iraq or you turn to the northern areas of Kurdistan, etc. Iran is surrounded. It's the Fifth Fleet of America, which is in the Persian Gulf. If the Iranian fleet was parked in Mexico or down in Florida, I wonder how the Americans would really react. So there's no parity. There's no. It's a ridiculous and absolutely pathetic effort on the part of Donald Trump to look like he's actually offering negotiations. He's not. He's offering a complete unequivocal surrender of Iranian sovereignty.
Well, Saad, how can Iran trust the United States when it never adhered to its part of the original agreement, when it was part of it, and then decided to basically make that deal null and void?
You see, the way the right wing in the American administration, which is today they are in control, or let me allow me to say the fascists, they say Trump didn't sign the JCPOA, and then Obama himself at the time of the signature didn't put it through to the Congress to affirm the deal. So the American president signature, the chief commander of the United States of America, is not enough for international agreement. We witnessed what his Trump, when he came to power in the first round in 2018, he started pulling the United States of America from lots of agreements. One of them, the Paris Protocol on global warming, and others. And all of that is just to show the United States of America only serve its own interests. So today, even with the tariffs he put internationally, shows the United States of America would wreak havoc in the international arena as long as you negotiate with the United States of America. So the United States of America needs someone to stand firm. In the other's hand, what is the Iranian demands from even any negotiation? We know the Iranian leadership has never surrendered to intimidation in its history. It has moved forward after the 1 year of the canceling of the agreement. It moved forward toward increasing enrichment rates and stood by its allies in Yemen, in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Iraq. Iran is asking for more extensive sanction relief today than what Obama provided himself. This is one of the major points the Iranian put at the table. It's not just what Obama did, more, because Iran today in a more advanced position. Iran wants also recognition. It's a nuclear program, includes the rights to some level of enrichment and to use its centrifuges that they built since 2018. Iran is interested in removing all the unfair, illegal sanctions they were put on the Iranian economy, and they devastated a lot of parts of the Iranian societies, these economical sanctions. So Iran today demands assurances that it would be able to access the SWIFT money transfer, which is all the international community uses, apart from the ones United States of America decided to put a noose and tighten it on them, like Russia or Venezuela, and ask as well the Western powers with the United States of America to remove their veto on international investment funds and companies who want to invest in Iran. We heard today the statement from the Chinese. China is a major player in the international community when they said the United States of America have to stop its stronger practice of using force to exert extreme pressure on Iran.
Well, Said Mosa, do you consider it significant that Trump announced that renewed talks with Iran would take place while Netanyahu was with him at the White House?
Well, they are birds of a feather. There's always this debate of whether it's Israel that's controlling America or America is controlling Israel. I don't think there's any distinction, is there, really? They are one and the same entity. They're an extension of one another. They're both part of the same imperialist agenda. They're part of they're tied to the hip on every level in terms of policy in West Asia. So it comes as no surprise that Trump makes that statement with Netanyahu, because he's obviously showing Iran that he's in full alliance with Benjamin Netanyahu. He's totally in line with his genocidal acts in that region, and he stands solidly with him in terms of ethnic cleansing. He totally supports his apartheid system. He supports Jewish supremacy. He's saying by that statement that he will stand by the oppression that Israel meets out largely with America's full backing, and he'll continue to do so. And that's also sending a message to the Islamic Republic of Iran that we will oppose every aspect of the Islamic Revolution's commitment to standing up for the oppressed, because of course that means Yemen. The indication is for the oppressed in Yemen who have lent on Iran for its moral and other support, the oppressed in Iraq who were murdered and mutilated by Saddam Hussein, who Iran stood by through thick and thin, even when the Americans unleashed ISIS in that region. He's also saying we're going to continue to block Iran out of the support of Hezbollah if they can. They won't let them support the Lebanese people in their fight for continued sovereignty. So by doing it with Benjamin Netanyahu, Trump is clearly aligning himself with every immoral, every illegal action that Israel takes on, and America is therefore fully culpable. And it's also telling the Iranians, look, we're not serious about negotiation. How can Iran take America seriously in negotiations about the region, about Iran's role in the region, if it's openly saying, I'm actually with Israel, which is the sworn, deadly if you like, enemy in the region of Iran, with its own 400 nuclear weapons pointing, you see, at Iran. It's just another way of Trump saying, I'm not really serious about negotiations.
Hmm. What's up? I mean, with the 18-month, the latest U.S.-Israeli genocide that is taking place now in Gaza, and obviously with what Syed Mohsen has said and what we all know about Washington and not really respecting international law, which is quite obvious with this genocide. So if an entity does not respect international law, can there be an effective international agreement made with it that it would keep its word? I mean, your assessment of that?
It's very, as Kissinger said, who's the real, as they call it, the real style politician. If you are a friend of an enemy of the United States of America, that is dangerous. But if you are a friend, that is fatal. So United States of America, as we are witnessing, doesn't respect any international player, any international forum, any international law, anything. And United States of America is openly supplying, as my colleague Masoud said, genocide and participating in genocide in Palestine. And from history, we learned once you are negotiating with the United States of America over anything, let's deal with the nuclear programs. Iraq in 1981, they destroyed it. Iraq after that invaded 91 because of Kuwait, 2003 because of lies about weapons of mass destruction. Today, Iraq is a devastated state. After that is Syria. Syria in 2007 being destroyed. There is a side, they said, a nuclear reactor in there, and suddenly Syria, we see today, it's in the Kfiri hands. Libya, once it handed its own nuclear reactor to the United States of America through Tony Blair at the time, and it's dismantled, we can see what's happened in Libya. The only example stand who defied the United States of America was the North Korean, and it's have its own bomb in there, and nobody would dare come north beside North Korea because it's capable of defending itself. The United States of America, after the Islamic Revolution of Iran, in 1979, the Islamic Revolution have a global impact, not just local, and it changed the dynamics of geopolitics in the region. And they want today, the United States of America, through the pathway of negotiation and that and sanction, to reach to the neck of the leadership of the revolution and impose regime change so it can loot the resources of Iran. We know Iran, apart from oil and gas, have the rare minerals in Iran which they need in the latest technologies on weaponry and telecommunication systems. So the danger of the path to negotiation without security and guarantees, because who's going to provide that security and guarantees? Once you start handing over your weaponry and defense, you will become a victim. You will become easy to be swallowed by the Zionist entity before even the Western allies.
Well, said Mohsen, Iran has said that negotiations can only take place indirectly, and force and threats must not be used, according to the foreign minister, and there must be mutual respect. Your thoughts? I mean, do you see Washington considering any other entity being on equal footing with it, or how do you see it?
Well, the indication comes from, first of all, the comment that Saad said earlier, that they don't respect their own friends, do they, or their allies? Because you can see what they're doing with the tariffs and the way Europe has been thrown into turmoil by Trump's reneging on any kind of formal economic pacts with Europe, essentially. So if America can't be trusted by those Zionist-run governments in the West, how on earth can anybody who's totally the most anti-Zionist establishment in the world, i.e. Islamic Republic of Iran, how can they really be expected to trust Donald Trump? I mean, has Donald Trump shown any goodwill? Has he loosened the sanctions at all? Has he released any funds, etc., that might be helpful to Iran? Has he told the World Bank to stop trying to economically terrorize the Iranian people? Has he made any concessions in terms of U.S. bases in the region? Has he withdrawn any of those? Has he stopped funding and financing ISIS on the borders of the Islamic Republic of Iran? Has he told Israel's attack dogs in Azerbaijan or over in northern Kurdistan, etc.? Have they stopped? Have they dismantled Al-Jundala or any of the terrorist organizations which blow up places in Tehran? For that matter, has he stopped the PSYOPs, the black ops that go on, you know, the regime change operations within Iran, trying to get people who are basically anti-Islamic revolution to overthrow the Islamic government? No, he's not done any of that. In fact, he's continued financing and funding those. I mean, today we know that whilst he's trying to look for places for cuts for ordinary people in America on all their ordinary services, he's just sanctioned $1 trillion in funding for the Pentagon, which does nothing for Americans in America in terms of its internal stability, but rather it does everything it can to destabilize Iran and any force which is there for the justice of the people of the world. And that's what he's in the business of. He is no less of a tyrant than Biden, because he doesn't call the shots. Behind him, there is an infrastructure which is in place, largely Zionist, largely moneylender mafia, and they dictate what America's policies will be, and their policies are that they want Iran to bend the knee, to give up all of its sovereignty, and then they'll do to it exactly what they did to Assad, because Assad started letting the US, the UAE and the Saudis and all the American puppets come in, and you see within a matter of months, Assad is gone. You saw that with Gaddafi, the same thing. He dropped his guard, let them all in, and before you knew it, NATO and America had dismantled him. This is the story time and time again. So the Islamic Republic of Iran knows this, and that's why they need to see evidence. And Congress, for instance, has never sanctioned any deals and negotiations with Iran. And what makes Iran think that if Donald Trump comes and does a deal with Iran today, gets them to do all this, this kind of this suicidal, debunking of their whole defense mechanism and their security, what tells them that Donald Trump won't just renege on all those deals, because Congress certainly aren't there, and they're not going to stop anybody. And so I don't think there's any trust whatsoever anybody could have in the foreseeable future.
All right. Well, Saeb, your thoughts. I mean, how likely is it that an agreement could be reached which could benefit Iran?
See, when you see in top of organization like the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, the director general of it, and then he in March, he raises his concern over the Iran enrichment of uranium. You would know this organization always, the heads of it, they have to have the blessing of the United States of America and the Western allies, and they be used just to now what at the hands of the International Atomic Energy Agency when it's concerned like that. We know this is, it means the whole issue have to go to the General Security Council, because that's there, plus Germany, who took the decision on the Iranian nuclear program. And then once they don't disagree over that, which definitely they won't agree, because the China and Russia will not agree with the Americans over that, then automatically the snapback mechanism gonna be released. And that means plus the sanctions and the maximum pressures Trump is putting, that to stagnate further the Iranian economy. But the leadership of Iran, they managed all along of these years to create routes of trade with different blocs like India, like China, like Russia, and like that, which is the created mechanism it can cope with the Western sanctions. So the best way is to stay away from negotiation with the United States of America, especially without guarantors. I don't know how you're going to bring guarantors who can make the American adhere to anything, because they prove themselves they cannot adhere to any international standard whatsoever. Okay. And they are thugs after only protecting the United States of America. So Iran have to find a way to protect itself more seriously.
And on that note, I wish we could continue this discussion, but we're out of time. Saeb Shaath, author and commentator out of Belfast, Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. Thank you both. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear listeners, brothers and sisters. We're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the different verses of Surah Qasas, the 28th chapter of the Holy Quran, and we have reached the 47th verse. Before we start discussing, let's listen to the verse we're going to discuss.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
ولولا أن تصيبهم مصيبة بما قدمت أيديهم فيقولوا ربنا لولا أرسلت إلينا رسولا فنتبع آياتك ونكون من المؤمنين.
And if not that a disaster should strike them for what their hands put forth of sins, and they would say, Our Lord, why did you not send us a messenger so we could have followed your verses and been among the believers?
So, in this verse, dear listeners, the Almighty Allah says that were it not that there should befall them a calamity for what their hands have sent before, ولولا أن تصيبهم مصيبة بما قدمت أيديهم فيقولوا ربنا لولا أرسلت إلينا رسولا. They would say, O Lord, why did you not send to us a messenger? So, you might remember that the previous verse denoted that the purpose of coming prophets was just for warning and admonitions. They were not in the world, they were not sent to the world to make people do something. No, they were just sent because they wanted to warn, and actually they were sent because of admonitions. So this 47th verse states another aim of the mission of the prophets, which is to complete the argument, and that is to shut the way of seeking pretext, actually. So in the verse under discussion, the Holy Quran, pointing to the grace given unto the Prophet, the last Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, says, وَلَوْلَا أَن تُصِيبَهُمْ مُصِيبَةٌ بِمَا قَدَّمَتْ أَيْدِيهِمْ were it not that there should befall them a calamity for what their hands have sent before. فَيَقُولُوا رَبَّنَا لَوْلَا أَرْسَلْتَ إِلَيْنَا رَسُولًا. And they would say, Our Lord, why did you not send to us a messenger so that we might follow your signs? فَنَتَّبِعَ آيَاتِكَ وَنَكُونَ مِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. And so be of the believers. So this is what they say. This is their pretext. So in fact, this verse refers to this point, that the path of truth is clear, and it has been made even clearer by the way of the prophets. And any intellect judges the falseness of paganism and idolatry. This ugliness of a great deal of their vain deeds, like tyrannies and cruelties, this belongs to the judgment of intellect. And even without sending prophets in this regard, they can be punished. But what the Almighty Allah actually did in this regard is that even in this field, he completed the argument. So he sent for them a prophet that warned them for actually what could have caused them punishment. And actually, he showed them the path. So in this 47th verse, dear listeners, we said that since the previous verse was discussing and denoting the purpose of coming prophets, this verse is specifically related to the grace given unto the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam. So in this field, you may remember that prior to our break, we said that the ugliness of some vain deeds like cruelties is obvious, and it doesn't need any kind of intellect even. But in this field, even in this field, upon which the judgment of intellect is clear, Allah sends prophets with heavenly books, and even he accompanies them with miracles in order to complete the argument. Why? Because this is the way, this is the tradition, this is the sunnah, this is the norm of the Almighty Allah, that he negates any kind of pretext. Why? So that no one can say their misfortune was because of a kind of lacking any clear, obvious understanding, or lacking any leader. And if they had divine leaders, they would not be misguided. So, however, this verse is among the verses that have indication to the necessity of grace through sending prophets. This verse shows that Allah's way of treatment is based on this fact, that he should not punish any nation for their sins before sending a prophet to them. So this is the tradition, this is the norm of the Almighty Allah. He only punishes people based on what kinds of understandings they've had. لَا يُكَلِّفُ اللَّهُ نَفْسًا إِلَّا وُسْعَهَا. The Almighty Allah burdens souls, burdens different people based on their capacities, and he is to send prophets to show the people the right path, and only then, if the people misguided the Almighty Allah, they are to be punished. in Surah An-Nisa, in the 165th verse, it has been stated, "We sent messengers as givers of glad tidings and as warners, so that people might have no argument against Allah after the invitation of the messengers, and Allah is the mighty, the wise." Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Worry ends when faith begins.
We are with you. How about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The streets of Palestine fell silent on Monday. In a unified response, Palestinian factions announced a general strike in all Palestinian territories and refugee camps abroad. The move comes in protest at Israel's non-stop assault on Gaza. The factions describe the strike as a collective message to the international community, a demand to halt what they call a systematic genocide. Since October 7, 2023, Israel's military campaign has left over 165,000 Palestinians killed or wounded. The vast majority of them are women and children.
It's crucial for Palestinians to take to the streets. This catastrophe affects all of us, from Gaza to the northern West Bank, with attacks happening everywhere. If we expect the world to act, we must lead the way.
Shops, schools, public institutions, and private businesses closed their doors, echoing the grief and the resistance of the people under siege.
The horrors we're witnessing are unbearable. These crimes demand daily action, not seasonal outrage. The attacks are escalating. Nothing is spared. The crime is massive, and silence is even worse.
From historic uprisings to citywide shutdowns, the general strike remains a powerful tool of resistance.
Today's strike carries key messages: rejecting the genocide, calling on Palestinians everywhere to support Gaza, boycotting Israeli goods, and urging the world to end its silence. Today the war's in Palestine, tomorrow it will extend to other countries. This must stop.
It's time for the people to have a voice and take action. Today marks the beginning, and we will continue until the war on Gaza and the northern West Bank end.
With refugee camps across Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan, and other supporting countries joining in, the voice of the streets is powerful, and the pain of Gaza has reached unbearable levels.
The empty streets and stores here sends a clear message. One is to Gaza that the pain enduring by Palestinians is the same. The other message is for the world that the time has come for a firmer move to stop Israeli crimes. Naqa Ahmed, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
U.S. President Donald Trump released a video claiming success in targeting what he described as a meeting of higher-ranking military officials. According to Trump, those struck were allegedly coordinating upcoming naval operations, a move he hailed as a strategic victory.
It's well known that part of Yemeni customs and traditions is for people to gather on the first day of Eid to celebrate. The enemy exploited this and targeted the gathering, while the head of the devil, Trump, claimed it was a military meeting. The Yemeni army remains in its military barracks, safeguarding its equipment, and was not affected by this strike, which clearly targeted civilians.
Yemeni military sources quickly refuted those claims, asserting that the airstrike did not hit any military targets. Instead, they say it struck a civilian gathering during Eid celebrations in Al Hudaydah, one of many such peaceful events happening across the country. The sources stressed that none of the victims had any connection to naval or military activity.
An enemy committed a crime by bombing unarmed, innocent civilians after its failure and inability to confront the Yemeni armed forces, achieving nothing but the targeting of civilians and Yemen's infrastructure. There is pressure on the U.S. administration, and that's what pushed Trump to mislead the American people by claiming he targeted Houthi leaders, when in reality, our military leadership is on the front lines and under the protection of God Almighty.
The same sources went on to describe the strike as part of the ongoing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. They argued that the attack, which resulted in dozens of deaths and injuries, highlights what they view as the moral and strategic failure of the U.S. administration.
Despite the destruction and loss, the people of Yemen continue to show remarkable resilience, even as airstrikes claim innocent lives. Communities gather, mourn, and rebuild, refusing to let war define their future. Abdulatif Al-Washalib, Sana.
Their voices filled with frustration and outrage, protesters once again hit the streets of Paris Sunday. They expressed their dismay at the relentless horrors being inflicted by Israel's military on the besieged Gaza Strip. One woman mourned what she called the murder of thousands of children in Gaza by trailing a long sheet of paper with the names of just some of those youngsters killed by the regime's forces. In recent weeks, hundreds more Palestinians have been killed in Israel's renewed bombing and shelling campaign in northern Gaza, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. Another indication, say some, Israel is acting with impunity.
I'm just so disappointed about that, and that's why we are in this place every week and since a long time, you know, because I just don't know, you know, our president is really complicit of this genocide and is really in, I don't know the word, but very, very close to Israel, and I don't understand that.
In a now notorious incident, Israeli forces killed 15 medics and aid workers, with a new video emerged showing their deliberate execution, as the victims were wearing highly reflective uniforms and were aboard clearly marked Red Crescent's ambulances on March 23rd. The video contradicts Israeli army claims that the vehicles were fired upon as they advanced suspiciously towards troops without headlights or emergency signals.
I can't imagine how we could believe anything coming from the Israelis, especially from the IDF. These people have been calling the children Hamas for a year and a half now. So what really surprised me is that some medias are still talking about alleged or probably or maybe or things like that. This is what's shocking. It's not shocking that they have killed some humanitarian workers and assassinated them.
The evidence showing execution-style killings was retrieved from a phone belonging to one of the victims, who was buried by Israeli forces in a mass grave.
Israel has once again warned residents to evacuate large areas of the territory ahead of further military action. Demonstrators here are asking where Gaza civilians, who are bearing the brunt of the conflict, can seek shelter or safety. Peter Hume, Paris.
It is only the second visit after his US trip since the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in November 2024 and his first visit to Europe since October 7, 2023. As a party to the Rome Statute, Hungary was required to act on the ICC warrant, but it ignored its obligations. In a press conference, Orban stated that Netanyahu's visit aims to deepen military and intelligence cooperation as well as economic ties between the two sides. He stated that Israel is one of Hungary's largest trading partners.
What makes this matter sad is that today here in Budapest, the killer of 50,000 Palestinian citizens, mostly innocent women, children and elderly, is here in town. That's the sad part about it.
While Israeli flags were hoisted on government buildings and all bridges across the Danube, anti-Netanyahu protests have been banned by the authorities.
Since the beginning of the genocidal war, 544 days now, there was a clear position from the Hungarian government saying that any pro-Palestine protests will not be permitted or allowed, and that's why people couldn't express their opinion clearly.
Smaller spontaneous protests occurred throughout the day, resulting in fines and arrests. One activist who had been fined several times stated that she was not even informed of the reason for the fines.
No, and the second time they pretended not to speak English until I was done, they spoke English and told me they do speak English. And when I asked them why, they refused to answer the two times.
Orban is not the only European leader who announced his willingness to defy international law. This state visit could set a precedent many around Europe fear.
This is, I think, one of the delicate elements of this this issue, that it's not only Orban. It may be Merz in the near future. Tusk, the Prime Minister of Poland, has said the same.
Despite Orban's breach of international law, European governments have remained silent. As a result, observers believe that this is just the first of several upcoming trips to EU member states. Germany's next chancellor, Friedrich Merz, has already signaled his intention to invite Netanyahu and refuses to commit his country to enforce the ICC arrest warrant. Dieter Reinisch, Budapest.
We are here to denounce the ongoing massacres in Gaza and the Israeli incursion in Dara. The people resisted bravely, sacrificing martyrs in the fight against occupation. We stand with them and will never accept Israeli control over our land.
As Israeli airstrikes on Syria escalate, the response from the international community remains absent. In Dara, however, the people have taken matters into their own hands. The popular resistance in southern Syria has proven that armed struggle remains the only way to confront Israeli expansion.
We stand with our brothers in Dara, just as we stand with Gaza. Resistance will never be defeated. Just as Gaza's fighters remain strong, so too will the resistance in Syria. Syrians and Palestinians are united, and together we will defeat Israeli occupation.
Beyond the battlefield, many protesters also blamed Arab regimes for their complicity in Israel's crimes. Calls for accountability rang out against Arab leaders, accusing them of betraying the Palestinian cause and enabling Israeli aggression in the region.
The Israeli occupation will fall. It's only a matter of time. But those who betrayed Gaza and Dara, like Jordan, Egypt, the UAE, and others, must be held accountable. Their complicity is a crime. And no matter what they do, the people will triumph.
With every act of Israeli aggression, the spirit of resistance grows stronger. Today's protests in Damascus and other Syrian cities are yet another testament to the unwavering determination of Syrians and Palestinians to defeat Israel. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
Al-Katiba area in northwestern Khan Yunis, which is included within the so-called safe zone and not far from the infamous Al-Mawasi area. Last night, the families inside this neighborhood were sleeping, and suddenly a massive explosion happened that shook the entire neighborhood. This home, which belongs to Al-Aggad family, was targeted last night, killing the entire family inside this house, father, the mother, and the three little children. But not only that, because of the devastating and massive scale of the bombardment, two of the neighbors as well were killed within this airstrike that was carried by the Israeli occupation.
You can see how closely the homes are built here. We were jolted awake by a thunderous blast, only to find the remains of neighbors scattered across the streets. Our neighborhood has already borne the brunt of Israel's aggression, and now, despite being labeled as a safe zone and instructed to be sought refuge here, we are still enduring relentless bombardment.
The families could collect the remains of the family and the neighbors due to this brutal attack that literally turned the family inside this home into pieces. The neighbors are still cleaning the rubble, looking for any of the remains of the family that was killed here.
The attack was so intense that we thought our home had been bombed, but it was our neighbors. We are still clearing the rubble, searching for more remains of the children who were killed alongside their parents here. These innocent people did nothing to deserve such a brutal end. We call on everyone in the world to put an end to this genocide.
This is the situation inside the so-called safe zone, where the occupation is now directing the families in southern Khan Yunis and Rafah to come to. More massacres and more killing is awaiting the families here who are still subjected to this massive campaign by the occupation that doesn't seem to go any easier on the families here. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis.
Whatever goes up must come down. A fitting theme for Yemen's military operations in support of Palestine. The armed forces of Yemen have downed yet another U.S. MQ-9 Reaper drone, an unmanned combat aerial vehicle capable of remotely control.
The Yemeni army's air defenses, with the help of Allah Almighty, were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al Hudaydah Governorate. The drone was downed with a locally made surface-to-air missile. This is the second drone being shot down in 72 hours and the 17th one during the operations in support of Gaza.
Yemen began its pro-Gaza operations in November 2023. Experts say the growing number of American drones being shot down by Yemen not only reflects tactical success, but signals a significant leap in the country's military capability.
The U.S. is very upset with what they have suffered in the Red Sea and Arabian Sea as Yemen continues to attack them. Moreover, Yemen will continue to advance militarily. Yemen is not satisfied with only shooting down 17 U.S. drones. In the near future, there will be more surprises that will benefit the people and armed forces of Yemen.
Amid the successful Yemeni operations, U.S. President Donald Trump has claimed that the country conducts its attacks with Iran's support, an allegation strongly denied by the Yemenis.
We will continue to support the people of Palestine. Our military success came from the preparation of our armed and air defense forces, and we will continue to counter this American aggression on our nation. We will continue to support Palestine. Iran is an ally of Yemen. However, they have no say whatsoever with regards to our wars and our military, defending our land from this U.S. aggression.
The United States launched intense airstrikes on Yemen last month after the Arab country resumed its maritime military operations in support of Palestinians in war-ravaged Gaza.
The Yemeni armed forces have shot down more U.S. drones, demonstrating their growing capability to counter advanced aerial threats and sending a clear message of defiance amid ongoing aggression against their country. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
This
is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Our Life is for Allah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab, on IB English Radio. And obviously the title, Our Life is for Allah, and this is this seems very obvious to say that. But I'm going to sort of try and just demonstrate it with the example of a very famous martyr from the Holy Defense, Shahid Mustafa Chamran. So he in particular was very attuned and sensitive to the suffering of others. And so he had had a very easy and happy life, enjoyed all the material benefits in America. Then he abandoned it all and he went to South Lebanon. And he was actually living among the deprived. But what he would, for example, say, so he would actually say that he wanted to be among them. And he would say that if he couldn't help the oppressed, he should live like them and accept their pain and sorrow in his heart. And so this idea that, serving others, wanting to be among others, and just in a sense wanting to do nothing but helping the oppressed, helping the poor, helping the disenfranchised. So in a sense to try to stop the suffering. So fighting against oppression, fighting against suffering, relieving oppression, obviously to the extent that human beings can, because obviously ultimately we know that everything does come from Allah, but obviously we must keep striving and doing our bit. And obviously this is how Martyr Mustafa Chamran understood his role was to be with the people, to help the people. And obviously this is a life that is for Allah. And obviously this is something I say again and again, that serving Allah is also expressed in serving others. Welcome back. This is A to Z on RB English Radio, and obviously I'm talking about serving others and serving Allah by serving others, and I've referred to the famous martyr Mustafa Chamran, who left his sort of what we call cushy or easy life in the US to go to the South Lebanon. Then obviously afterwards he went back to Iran, and so he understood his role in life as helping so working towards stopping oppression, stopping suffering. And, you know, obviously, so the question is, what can we do? And before we even get to the stage of the actions, what can we do? Maybe we need to ask ourselves, well, how do we need to think? Because, you know, we hear this a lot. This is not just from Islam. You know, so modern non-Islamic sources tell us that, you know, we must first change our mindset. And obviously we know that in Islam, it's all about the mindset. When we change the way we think, the way we phrase our intention, then obviously the correct actions will flow from that. So what do I mean? What is the mindset we need to sort of develop or nurture in us? So obviously we need to understand that we as Muslims, we're not on our own. The whole Ummah, and beyond that, all of humanity, we are sort of a one body. We're all tied together. And obviously we are told, for example, the Hadiths tell us that, or the Holy Prophet said, that obviously, if we wake up one day and we're not concerned for how the rest of how other Muslims are faring in the world, then, well, what should we be calling ourselves? I'm not going to express that. But, you know, this is something the Holy Prophet said. So we need to be... we need to hold ourselves to very high standards. We really need to have that concern for others. And this is obviously a mindset of compassion towards others and understanding that even though our life might be relatively easy, there are others who are suffering. And so obviously that's where we then need to think, well, what can we do? Is there any actions, any particular things that we can do to... relieve to contribute towards ending that suffering or that oppression. So inshallah, this gives you maybe just some food for thought, and I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on iBangladesh Radio, and farewell for now.